Hey, this is Arden Zwelling. You are listening to The Walk-Off with Scott and Adam.
Baseball, Blue Jays, and more baseball. It's The Walk-Off with Scott Belford and Adam Mack.
This ball is crushed.
The Die Hard podcast for the casual fan.
And another one.
Everybody to The Walk-Off. Appreciate the listenership as always. I'm Scott Belford, joined by Adam Mack as always, and we are going to be pretty quick here off the top and throw to our interview and chat with Arden Zwelling. We sat down with him last night and talked all things Blue Jays. We got into the Jose Berríos extension, his press conference that he had, what it means for the Jays going forward. We get into Robbie Ray winning the Cy Young Award and where he might wind up in free agency. And Arden even kind of gets into the sports broadcasting side of things and goes over a typical day for him at the ballpark and stuff like that. It's pretty cool. You can follow us on Twitter at Walk Off Podcast. On Instagram, The Walk-Off Podcast. We're also on TikTok now as well. So before we do throw to Arden, I have two little pieces of information or two little tidbits to get into here.
Some housekeeping.
Housekeeping. Thank you. Nailed it, Adam.
Nailed it. I've listened to my fair share of podcasts.
The biz for nothing, yeah. A little housekeeping to take care of. So in our mailbag episode that we released on Tuesday, something that we started back up, we were doing it throughout the season where we'd kind of go over our YouTube comments or our messages from you folks on Twitter and Instagram. We've also got a Discord going, which is for free. And you'll see the link here below in the YouTube if you look for it. But we kind of go through and take all those questions and then answer them. And in this Tuesday's episode, we wound up bringing up that Teoscar and Vladimir Guerrero Jr., both of which are arbitration eligible this year, would be getting around $20 million each in arbitration. Now, this was a mistake. Then that's on me. My apologies. And we do appreciate you listeners setting us straight. It is expected that it's $20 million in arbitration total for those two. So not each, total. In fact, Vladdy is expected to get somewhere between, and of course arbitration, it's up in the air until they actually come up with the number. But the guess is somewhere between $6.5 and $8.5 million because it is his first year of arbitration eligibility. Next year as high as 15, and then he starts making big bucks, right? Teoscar's expected somewhere around that 10 to 12 mark. So apologies for the mistake. Now you're all in the know as to what it actually is, and we'll move on from there. Now the MVPs for the National League and American League were announced as we were talking to Arden, so we didn't bring it up, so we did wish to just quickly acknowledge that Shohei Ohtani, as expected, won the MVP in the AL, and it was unanimous. 30 votes, first place. 29 second place votes for Vladdy. One Kansas City homer is all I can think. Voted Sal Perez.
Really?
In second place. And then Marcus Semien finished third in voting. Bryce Harper winning the National League MVP.
Punchable face still.
Yeah. Not encouraging it, but he was on the most punchable face team of Adams earlier in the season.
Yes, he was.
All right, everybody. Thanks again for listening and enjoy our interview with Arden Zwelling. All the best.
Hey, this is Arden Zwelling. You are listening to The Walk-Off with Scott and Adam.
Very excited to be joined once again by Blue Jays insider, host of At the Letters podcast and Sportsnet analyst Arden Zwelling. Welcome back to The Walk-Off, man. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Good to be here. How are you guys?
Very well. Lots going on in Blue Jays land. Man, we're very excited that you're taking the time here. And I did want to just mention before we kind of get into things here, the interview that you and Ben did on At the Letters with Ross Atkins a few weeks ago, man. It was incredible, buddy. Like, as a baseball nerd, to kind of get that, like, insightful peek behind the curtain of what's going on in the organization was very cool, and you guys nailed it.
I appreciate you saying that, man. We hadn't had Ross on in a little while, but I think that just it's a really good format for him because he gets to kind of expand a bit more. Like in the press conference setting, it's always very question, answer, and you're on to this topic and on to that topic. And when you're in that podcast format, you get to kind of expand and go down on tangents and things like that and follow up a little bit more. So, yeah, and you know, Ben and I talk about it all the time. time, like Ross Atkins, Mark Shapiro, these guys do give quite a bit of insight and quite a bit of a look into their strategy and what they're thinking about doing. Everything that they've said they are going to do, they have done. So I know that sometimes the language can be a little, you know, it takes a bit of translating. Sometimes it can be a little corporate and a little bit like you're, you know, on hold with American Airlines or something like that. But
yeah, the front office speak, they do get crap for sure.
Yeah, right. It can be a little, you know, it can be a little tough for some people. But once you get past that, like they are pretty, you know, pretty transparent about what's going on.
And it's just so obvious they have a plan. Like, it's very exciting as a fan to kind of see it laid out in front of you and then kind of look at what they've already said they're going to do and watch that they've accomplished it and just like get excited for the future, you know?
Yeah, I was literally just talking to Ben Nixon Smith, my podcast co-host, about this. Like, there is a whole podcast we could do just on the arc of public perception with Ross Atkins and Mark Shapiro, right? Because we were talking about how, you know, the Blue Jays have finished second for a number of free agent starting pitchers this winter, which was similar, you know, last winter, the winter before, but the sentiment at that time was a bit more impatient and maybe, you know, just a bit more angsty. And now, you know, it kind of seems like, and none of us really know, we don't really have like an accurate idea of what the fan base is thinking at any time. You can't just look at your Twitter mentions and say that's what the fan base thinks, because that's, you know, less than 10% of the fan base. But it does seem like there's a bit more patience and a bit more trust now, and that a bit more, you know, a bit more trust has been earned over the years.
100% agree. And we are going to dig right into the Blue Jays here, but I did wish to talk a little bit about just your career in general, because sports broadcasting, it's an incredibly competitive market, and it's such a grind that people don't see what goes on behind the scene, you know, the starting in the small towns and then, you know, working your way up and the constant fear of being fired as you move your way up. You know, it's just stuff that you deal with. So I'm very curious, once you kind of got the nod that you're going to Sportsnet, you're covering the Blue Jays full time, did that feel like a huge win to you? Like, was that kind of the sports broadcasting equivalent of winning the World Series, or are you just always striving for more? Like, how did that go about? What was that experience like?
I guess it's the trap that everyone falls into where they don't really smell the roses and they don't appreciate where they are and their accomplishments, right? They just move on to the next thing and they don't actually reflect on, you know, take time to actually, I think everybody does this in any field, right? When you guys are stand-up comedians, right? So like, yeah, you know, you book that you headline for the first time or whatever it is, or you book that first club date or something like that. You get off of open mics and you don't kind of, you know, take a second to appreciate where you've gotten to. You're just thinking about the next thing and the next thing. So it's kind of similar, right? I think everybody falls into that trap where you're just constantly looking ahead. But yeah, I mean, it's been cool. You know, it's been 10 years now at Rogers for me with Sportsnet, started with Sportsnet magazine 10 years ago, you know, not even really writing, like as an assistant editor, you know, maybe writing little blurbs at the front of the book in the magazine, and then moving on to doing features and covering the Blue Jays, covering the Raptors, traveling around, doing a lot more TV now, the radio, the podcasting, social media stuff, everything. So it's been pretty cool, but it does happen.
You're
quick.
One of the guys now.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Yeah. Guys and gals,
guys and gals.
The way, you know, with how hectic it is and how busy things are, like, yeah, you probably don't take enough time to sit back and kind of appreciate it. But it's pretty cool, man. Like, I watch sports for a living and talk about sports for a living, so I can't complain.
No, it is very cool. I know my wife and I flew down to Seattle in August for the Mariners Jays series there. And there was a moment where you and Hazel were on the field and just kind of interviewing some of the players and stuff like that. And my wife turned to me and she went, that would be the best job. Just talk to a few players and then call it a day. And I laughed so hard at that because that's what we all watch happen. But obviously, I even said to her, I'm like, oh, I guarantee those interviews are just a minuscule part of his actual full day. So I am curious, and I know we've been asked a couple times what it was like for a sports broadcaster. Like, we do have listener questions for you here, and that was one that did come up. What does a regular day at the ballpark, and let's put COVID aside because I know that's changed everything the last couple years, but just a regular day at the ballpark for Arden Zwelling, what does that look like?
Well, yeah, that's right, because the last couple of years I hasn't been at the ballpark at all, has it? Finally got back there for the last 2 months of 2021, and like, wow, was that nice, right? Like, that was so refreshing just to be around the game again. You miss so much watching on TV. It's such a reminder being back in the ballpark, just like how fast things happen. You know, when Randall Grichuk is like trying to advance from second to third on a fly ball to right field, just how fast he's moving, how quick that throw is coming in, right? How bang, bang the play at third is. Like, it, you know, television really does rob the game of its speed. Like, baseball might look pretty slow on TV, but when you're up close, and the closer you get to it, by the way, like, you know, the closer you get to the field, the faster it is. So it was such a nice reminder. That was a weird tangent. I'm sorry. At the ballpark, you know, day to day, probably rolling into the ballpark around 2:30 p.m. for a 7 p.m. start. Getting set up in you know, in the press box, and you know, just having a coffee and kind of just getting organized, and then down to the clubhouse around 3:30 p.m. This is the normal times, by the way, when we were in the clubhouse. We haven't been in the clubhouse the last couple of years, but prior to that, down to the clubhouse around 3:30. You know, shoot the breeze with whoever's around, coaches, players, check out the lineup, just kind of see what's happening, you know, who's injured, who's carrying something. Oh, that guy's not in the lineup. Why not? What's that all about? Figuring out who might be available out of the bullpen, things like that. Manager Charlie Montoya would usually talk around 4:30, somewhere in that range, have a scrum with him, get updates on this, that, and the other. It's batting practice on the field. Hanging out, maybe you're interviewing somebody, maybe you're waiting for somebody, maybe you're talking to a coach, you know, shooting the breeze with other media members, things like that. BP is over, head back up, maybe a quick bite to eat, maybe if you have time, but you're probably scrambling to write something. 6:30 p.m. back down to the field for that hit that you were mentioning with Hazel or with Rash. You know, Shai, Ben, and I will go in and do a Blue Jays Central hit at 6:30 from the field. Back up, game's at 7. Game 7 till 10, you're watching the game, you're writing during the game, you're filing for the final out. As soon as the final out is recorded, you file your first piece, your first game story, as it were. There aren't even really game stories anymore, right? Like your first column, whatever you're writing about, file that, down to the clubhouse, talk to the manager, talk to players, interviews, gather some more information, back up to the press box, flush out your story, adding quotes, adding details, whatever you've learned. And, you know, on a good night, maybe you're out of there at, you know, 11:30 midnight on an extra innings night, or a night when there's, you know, a few other stories to write because somebody got hurt or because there was a brawl or whatever. Yeah, maybe you're there beyond midnight, and then you go home and, you know, try to get some sleep, wake up, do it all over again the next day.
So the narrative of you just going down, doing a few quick interviews and going for the day, not really how it goes.
No, but you know, we all look at other industries and other jobs and don't really understand all the like BS that is involved in it, right? Like, you don't really know how.
Sure.
We think accountants just, you know, sit with spreadsheets all day, but I'm sure there's a lot more that goes into it, right? Like, we, you know, every industry, every job, like, unless you've actually done it, you don't actually really understand what it's like and how much goes into it.
Oh, most people think I work 1 hour a day, which is, it's not accounting for the years of building the act and all that sort of stuff, right? So it's an interesting time of year, too, because I know building and maintaining relationships in your business is, I mean, a huge deal. And it is that time of year, right? Rumors and stories are breaking. Obviously, you don't need to get into names or anything like that. But what were some lessons that you had to learn before you got to where you are, and what are the general rules when it comes to sources and breaking a big story?
Well, you know, I don't do the transactional stuff, really. I mean, like, Shai and Ben do such a good job of that, you know, at Sportsnet. Like, I don't think it's really a value add for me to be another person who's doing that stuff. And like, it's a, you know, that hamster wheel is intense. You don't ever really get to jump off of it when you're trying to be, you know, on the level of like some of the best trade breakers and rumor breakers in the game, right? You think of Ken Rosenthal and Jeff Passan and John Heyman and all these guys, right? So, you know, that's like, you know, that's big league stuff. And like, that requires a whole lot of work and a lot of grinding. And like you said, relationship building and source building. Like, I more so use, you know, off the record conversations or, you know, text messages with people. And you know, just I use that more so to inform my opinion. And so more so that I can go on the radio or go on the podcast or in TV and kind of say things that are typically going to happen after you say them. Right? Yeah. So I kind of just use that just to build a knowledge base and to kind of get a sense and an understanding of what's happening throughout the industry and what teams are thinking and trends and, you know, what players are thinking and, you know, what's important to all the stakeholders in this game, whether it's front office, you know, execs, whether it's owners, whether it's agents, whether it's players, whether it's coaches, right? Because everybody's got their own different perspective and their own different motivations on things. So I more so use that information that way rather than to be the, you know, sources. Team X and player Y agree on this.
So what you're saying then is that if we read an article from you that says the Jays should consider extending Vladdy right now, maybe there's some background information off the record to that story.
I mean, well, the Blue Jays should definitely look at extending Vladimir Guerrero Jr. regardless. Right? It's a really good player, you know, and he's, 4 years in free agency, right? So that clock is ticking. He's about to enter, you know, arbitration. But yeah, like, it, you know, if you read something in my story, like there's a reason why I've written that in there. I haven't just like pulled it out of my, you know, out of thin air.
Well, I'm sure there's even an aspect of maintaining relationships there. It's funny because Adam and I learned a lesson very early on here, and we're not going to name names, obviously, but a higher end prospect sat down with us for an hour and he had a little blurb, literally. And it's funny because these kids that are so young, right? Once they sit down and they talk to you for an hour, they're just so loose and forthcoming with information by about the 40-minute mark, right? They're not really holding anything back. And there was a moment where one of the guys had said we had asked him about Vladdy's weight loss last year. And mm-hmm. He kind of was like, I don't understand the big deal. So Vladdy's got a fat ass, big deal. He's killing it, right? But then that wound up like getting some bad attention for him, and he like, you know, called me in a panic and he's like, oh my goodness, like we need this off, and like, and it hadn't even occurred to Adam and I, like, honestly.
Yeah.
We even laughed at it when he said it because it just came across that way, and like we have been much more aware of that sort of thing since that has happened. And just like, you know, when somebody's going to spend their time with you, to maybe not, even if it's accidentally, you know, throw them into the fire, right? Like,
well, it's one thing, right? When someone's on a Zoom with you, right? That's being recorded and you've said expressly, yes, this is an interview I'm going to put on my YouTube, right? Like, I think you understand at that point that whatever you say is probably going to go out for public consumption. Like, it's a little, yeah, with, you know, if I'm having an interview with somebody, sometimes that might veer on the record and veer off. And we're typically kind of communicating with each other about like, oh, just, you know, just on background, let me color that in for you. Here's this, right? And then, so yeah. I'm not going to attribute that to that individual and quote them on it. But yeah, it's going to inform my opinion. And it's going to color what I say, or, you know, how I sort of describe something. So yeah, it's, you know, it's, I think just clear and concise communication is always the best way to get through those things. And like, if somebody, you know, I've had those instances where I've interviewed somebody, I'm standing there with my mic and they've said something, and I'll say to them, that's on, right? Like, I'm going to quote you on that, like, just so you know. And yeah, you know, I think that's always, that's appreciated and that's respected.
Do you ever get, side. Do you ever get a retroactive off the record where someone does say something and you go, well, that's on the record, right? I can quote you on that. And they go, oh, would you mind not?
No, I don't think so. I don't think I've ever had one. Somebody who came, well, I don't know, maybe on features, there's been a couple situations, like some of those features interviews and for, you know, the big reads I would write about the Blue Jays. I mean, I'm talking to somebody for like 2 hours. So
Right. Yeah. There,
you know, there are sometimes like, oh, hey, when what I get a lot more is like the clarifications of like, oh, when I said this, like what I actually meant was that. And I'm just like, yeah, no, totally. Like, I understand it. Cause that's how I always leave every interview for a feature, you know, any kind of one-on-one. I'm like, look, you got my number. Text me if you have any concerns, or, you know, you think you've, you know, misstated something, like, let me know. Very rarely does that come up, but yeah, once in a while it'll be like, hey, like when I said this, I actually meant this. And usually it's like, yeah, of course that's what you meant. But they just, you know, just want that reassurance. So it doesn't happen that often.
I think it was in the case I was talking about, is just that he was, you know, a low A prospect that was higher up on the rankings. And so he was getting attention and hadn't really, I guess what I'm saying is it was a lesson on his part too. You know, like he knew we were putting this all out there. So
yeah. Athletes are in a no-win situation when they're talking to people like us, man. Yeah. Like, they really are. I don't know why anybody ever agrees to an interview. Right? Because, look, you say something, like, you know, we're always like, oh, I wish these athletes be more forthcoming, right? And would, you know, be more honest. But then they say something forthcoming, and then it's like a 24-hour news cycle about that forthcoming thing they said.
Yeah.
Why did you say that forthcoming thing? You know, like, it's either you want them to be honest and direct or you don't, right? And it's, you know, I could, it put myself in an athlete's position, I would totally understand just like checking out from doing stuff like that, or at least only doing it through your own channels, like a lot of athletes do, so that you're kind of controlling how the message is put out there. Because otherwise you're going to end up aggregated and, you know, clickbaited and in headlines everywhere, and it's like the whole thing, and now all of a sudden you're having to give an apology press conference for this thing that you said, and like, well, why even bother with that, right? So I totally understand why athletes are so milquetoast and blasé when they talk to us.
100%. And that's a perfect transition to get into the Blue Jays here. Obviously, Jays fans woke up Tuesday to huge news. Jose Berrios, whom that front office went out and spent big time prospect capital on. And then the fact that they were able to lock him up. Like, it is just so impressive. And then to watch this press conference this morning, and honestly, Arden, it just made me so excited for where this organization is at. Like, Berrios straight up came out and said that when he was traded to Toronto, he still planned fully on going into free agency, but the diversity of the team, the city, the respect everyone showed him, the front office, the way his family felt so safe in the city, it changed his mind. And it kind of feels like this organization has turned a corner when it comes to attracting high-end talent in that aspect. What was some of the stuff you took from that?
Well, so we've seen it a few times, right? Like when Mark Burley was traded to Toronto, it didn't seem like he wanted much to do with Toronto. And then by the end of it, right, because he couldn't have his dogs, the whole deal.
Yeah, his pit bulls weren't allowed.
By the end of it, he loved it. You know, when guys like Marcus Stroman and Aaron Sanchez are drafted by the Blue Jays, I remember them talking about, like, you know, not really knowing the first thing about Toronto. And now it's pretty hard to question how they loved it here in Toronto. And, you know, Josh Donaldson, another guy who, you know, came to love Toronto. He did his whole tour when he was back here this year, right? Talking to every outlet and doing the exchange of jerseys of Vladdy. Yeah. So, you know, signaling to the crowd and the whole deal, right? Like, it does seem like there can be some trepidation with professional athletes, particularly those from perhaps like the lower half of the United States, in coming to Toronto and coming to Canada. But then once they get here, they realize, like, oh man, this is pretty sick. This is pretty great. You know, this is a beautiful city, and, you know, there's a nightlife and plenty of places to eat and, you know, whatever you want to get into, and you're playing for a country, right? It's like coast to coast support. And when the team's good and the Rogers Center is packed, like, the atmosphere is second to none. And I mean, some of the resources, particularly that have been laid in recent years with the Blue Jays when it comes to high performance and, you know, mental coaches, swing coaches, all the video analysis they have, brand new hitting cages at the Rogers Center, the player development complex in Dunedin, state of the art, you know, a lot of the, you know, the resources, like, the Blue Jays over the last 5-6 years have really kind of upped the ante with that stuff. And Ross Atkins and Mark Shapiro talk about this a lot. They want to make this one of the best places to play in baseball. So, you know, that's the stuff you kind of have to do. And look, Jose Berrios, yeah, never thought he would be a Blue Jay. He's been a Blue Jay for less than 4 months. He only spent 2 months really in Toronto and playing at the Rogers Center. And that was, in that time, he was sold on staying in Toronto, being a Toronto Blue Jay for at least 5 years and possibly 7. For a guy who's as young as he is, as durable as he is, as good as he is, only a year from free agency, that's pretty exceptional, because he very easily could have pocketed his $11 million in arbitration, poured all of his energy into being stellar in 2022, having another season like the last four he just had, and hit the market where, I mean, a 28-year-old durable frontline starter, the Yankees are going to be in on that, the Dodgers, the Angels, all the big spenders, like, that bidding could have gotten, it could have escalated to a pretty good degree. So the Blue Jays did a really, really great sell job with Jose Berrios and convincing him to sign this extension, which is a massive win for the team.
Well, I love that one of the things he brought up when asked one of the things he loved about Toronto, and he just kept going off about the food. And then we went out to this place, and then we're going out the food. He just
matters. Yeah.
Food it is. It matters. And it's cool.
Yeah, you know, there's certain MLB markets where you probably can't get very good Latin food, right?
Nope, you know, I guarantee.
there's a lot of guys who you heard this with Verlander, where he was like, "Yeah, I only want to go to a club that has spring training in Florida." You'd be surprised for a lot of players how they're like, "Yeah, I only want to be in Arizona for spring." That's 6 weeks of your year that you're spending in that one place. You want to be comfortable in that place, you know. I remember talking to a guy recently who was in free agency, and he was like, "Dude, you have no idea how much of a say like spouses have in this, right? How much of a say your family has in this." That's a massive factor that we tend to only think of, you know, the baseball situation. Are you going to win there? What's your role going to be on the team? Dollars and cents, obviously. But I do think that, like, you know, it's a family decision. Like, I think right now Robbie Ray is making a family decision, 100%. Not just a Robbie Ray decision.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Very curious your thought on the way this contract is structured. I know that Shai Davidi kind of tweeted it out, and it looks like it's fairly back-end loaded, which means that maybe there is some real wiggle room to lock someone up high-end for a couple years in this next couple years. Why do you think it was structured that way? Do you think they're thinking of it that way for signing somebody more recently, or is it just the way it worked out?
So I think the trade-off, the way it probably happened, was Berríos' side wanted the opt-out after the fifth year, and the Blue Jays said, "Okay, we'll give you that, but then we're going to backload this, where, you know, a lot of the money is going to be after that fifth year." And you know, if you're the Blue Jays, you're totally fine with that, because it preserves flexibility in the next few seasons. Like you said, in 2022, this changes nothing payroll wise. You were already going to pay Jose Berríos like $11 million through arbitration. So your payroll is exactly the same with this extension as it was going to be in 2022. Your roster needs also exactly the same, because Jose Berríos was always going to pitch for you, but you have preserved your flexibility in 22. In 23, it's starting to tighten a little bit. Like, you still got room. I think the Blue Jays could still layer in another like Springer-esque contract into their sort of their spreadsheet going forward. But like 23 is the year where you need to start really being mindful of payroll. And like, let's just put it out there. Like, obviously Rogers Communications could afford to run like an enormous payroll. Every MLB owner could afford to run an enormous payroll, but there's a difference between what you can afford to run and what you will. And if the Blue Jays are going to stay around the 150 million mark, yeah, you look at 23 and you look at Springer at like 24, 25 million, Ryu at 20, Berríos at 15, Grichuk at 10, Lourdes is in there at around 6. You're going to be looking at raises through arbitration for Vladimir Guerrero Jr., and Teoscar Hernandez, Bo Bichette's going to be hitting arbitration. You're going to, you know, the wiggle room's going to get a little bit tight unless you're going to be moving payroll up to that, like, you know, 170 range, right? So Blue Jays is going to have to be mindful of that, but like, I promise you that they are. We all know that they are. So the way this was structured, I think, is a big win for the Blue Jays, because it really has preserved flexibility for them and allowed them to, as we've seen, continue to pursue guys like Noah Syndergaard and Justin Verlander and Andrew Heaney and Eduardo Rodriguez. They've been in on those guys, so it's not preventing them from doing anything.
I know you did bring up Robbie Ray, and we'll just touch on him briefly. I know I watched him on Tim and Friends yesterday after his Cy Young win was announced, and there's so many fans who took his comment of, "I'm just going to enjoy free agency and the process and see where it lands," as he's most likely not coming back, which I don't think is necessarily what he was saying.
What were we just saying about how athletes are in a no-win situation in spots, right? Yeah, because you say, what do you want him to say, right? And then everybody's going to interpret it a different way. Like, what's he supposed to say in that position, right? Like, "Hey, Rob, you're going to come back to Toronto, yes or no?" You have to answer yes or no right now. Like, it's crazy. I think Robbie Ray is just exploring free agency, as he should, man. Like, it's a rare opportunity. Like, Jose Berríos turned down a rare opportunity to hit free agency as a 28-year-old durable frontline starter. And who knows? In 2022, could have taken a comebacker off his hip and, you know, had to miss 6 weeks, could have blown out his elbow. His performance could have declined. Like, there's a lot of things that could have happened. But based on his track record, you would expect him to have another 22 like the 4 years prior, based on his work ethic as well, right? Like based on everything, that the way he nails his routines, pregame, postgame, nutrition, sleep, all that stuff. So you would expect him to go out and continue to be Jose Berríos. And man, if he entered that market, it would have been interesting to see. Like, that's part of why I'm like, I just wish we could have seen it. Cause I think that he could have, you know, I think the bidding could have gone pretty wild insane. With him, right? Like you look at Patrick Corbin was a year older, didn't have the track record that he did. It wasn't as projectable and athletic as Jose Berríos is. And you've seen what's happened to Patrick Corbin's career since. He did 6 years, 140, Patrick Corbin, right? So Berríos just essentially had those six free agent years bought out for 6, 120. I would think Corbin at 6, 140 is even below Berríos's floor. It could have gone to 6, 170. Yeah. It could have gone to 7, 200. As a 28-year-old, right? You know, how often does that guy hit the open market? So Robbie Ray has a rare opportunity right now. It's so hard to get. How many pitchers sign 9-figure deals? It's a very, think about how many pitchers there are globally in MLB, right? Just in affiliated baseball, not even the guys that don't even make it and go and play in Japan and Korea and Australia, just in MLB, an insane amount. And it's a very select few who get to sign 9-figure deals and who get to do so in an open market environment. So Robbie Ray should absolutely explore free agency and see what's out there. It's a very rare thing he's doing, and it's a very difficult position to get to.
Also, he deserves it so much after betting on himself so heavily in 2021, because he probably could have done more than $8 million 1 year last year, but he liked what Toronto was offering him. He liked what Pete Walker was doing for him and just got it out of the way right away, or at least that's the perception I got out of that. I don't know.
I don't know if he could have done more. He would have had to wait longer, right? Like he had more days into the offseason. He probably would have had to wait till the end when it was like, all right, who's left? Jake Odorizzi, Robbie Ray, and Taiwan Walker, right? Like that, he might have had to do that thing. But clearly, like you said, he enjoyed Toronto, wanted to be here. Again, pretty quick sell job, Robbie Ray. One month he spent with the Blue Jays, didn't even go to Toronto, in Buffalo. Yeah. 1 month. And, you know, liked what Pete Walker had to show him, liked what the Blue Jays were seeing in his delivery and some of the tweaks and some of the ways they were able to help him. And yeah, that's another, you know, just another big win by the Blue Jays and convincing him to come back, sign him for, you know, you trade Travis Bergen for him. Bergen ends up coming back to the organization. You sign him for a year and $8 million. You get a Cy Young winner. I mean, that's as good as, you know, and like a guy who dramatically improves his walk totals and his success on the mound with you, a guy who several other organizations had tried to help and had tried to get to realize his potential and had failed to do so. And your pitching group, your developers and your performance staff were able to get him there. It's a huge win as an organization.
And while we're going through the pitching ranks here, I'm really curious on your view on Hyunjin Ryu. I know he kind of had a, by no means a disaster year. It was just a down year in 2021 for him. And there were a lot of variables, right? Like his wife and his kid were still in Korea. He had some injury stuff. He just never really seemed to be the guy we saw in 2020. Do you think it's more likely that we see his career average type of stuff, or do you think 2021 might be indicative of where he's headed?
I think it's going to come down to how the Blue Jays manage his workload. Like, I do think that fatigue was a factor for him towards the end of the season. So I think the Blue Jays, and we saw the Dodgers do this as well, like they're just going to have to be a bit more mindful about how they manage his workload, stealing him an extra day here and there. We saw this year, the two occasions the Blue Jays got him on the 10-day IL. It was literally just the 10 days, right? But it just gave him a bit more time to recover and a bit more time to get back to where he needed to be physically. So, you know, keeping an eye on his velo, obviously, and how his stuff is performing is that's just really going to be have to be something the Blue Jays manage going forward to get the best out of him, I think. And that makes sense. Like, it's an older guy, there's a lot of mileage on his body. It's not like he's playing with stuff that he blows by people, right? Like, he's playing with a 90 mile an hour fastball, right? 91 on a really good day, sometimes 89
spots. Yeah.
Yeah, so his command has to be precise, and he needs to be hitting those edges, and his stuff needs to be acting the way that he wants it to be. He needs to be locating it where he wants it to be so that he can properly sequence and set up hitters and get, you know, soft contact outs and a decent amount of strikeouts as well. So I think just managing that, maybe there's a little mechanical tweak they can make with him, but I kind of think Hyunjin Ryu just is who he is. He's such a unique guy. He doesn't throw bullpens. Yeah, he's like very routine oriented. He's got his own kind of crew, his own strength coach, and some people that he kind of talks to and deals with. And he's like very particular about how he goes about his business. So, I don't know that we're ever going to see peak Hyunjin Ryu over these last 2 years, but you sign one of these long free agent contracts with a veteran pitcher, you kind of understand that towards the back end, and you are going to be paying for some decline.
I really got a kick out of this season when Alek Manoah buddied up with him and then was asked about it. And he was like, well, we're both big bodied guys. And that made me laugh so hard. You need to play baseball for so long to describe yourself as big bodied. Like,
Alek Manoah is a big
body.
But they both are.
Yeah.
Alek Manoah is huge. He's an offensive lineman. Nate Pearson, too, right? Pearson, Ryu, and Manoah, you got 3/5 of a pretty good offensive line right there. What's interesting about that, actually, I think that Jose Berríos can be a really good influence on Alek Manoah as well. Like, we've seen from what you were saying with the bond that Manoah and Ryu forged, Alek Manoah is eager to learn, right? Like, and he's eager to soak up as much knowledge as he can. And you look at kind of the pitch profiles with Jose Berríos and Alek Manoah, very similar. Look at the way they attack hitters, the way they like to turn a lineup over, the way they sequence. They, you know, pretty similar profiles.
Curveballs, yeah.
So I really think that Alek Manoah can learn a lot from a guy like Jose Berríos in terms of how he pitches, and also as just a model of professionalism and what it takes to throw 32 starts a year. Jose Berríos hasn't missed a start in 4 years, guys. Like, that doesn't happen by mistake. You don't roll out of bed and do that. There is so much work and so much granular attention to detail that goes into being able to be that consistent and that durable. It takes so much. And
his durability is probably one aspect that is overlooked in this whole thing, because it's elite. It's wild what he's
almost second to none in baseball in this era, right? What Robbie Ray did this year from a durability standpoint was absolutely absurd. So he missed like his first start of the year because he fell down the stairs carrying his kid. And then from that point on, he pitched every 5 days. I mean, I swear, guys, you'd get there on like a Thursday at 2:30 in the afternoon and he'd be throwing his bullpen and he's grunting in his bullpen. And you could hear him like throughout the Rogers Center. He's going max effort in his bullpens, like then carrying that out onto the mound, 95, 100 pitches, throwing as hard as he does with as much effort as he does. The fact he led the American League in innings pitched was so impressive. So yeah, Berríos, another guy whose durability is really, really underrated.
You know, it's interesting with
that. Sorry, Adam, go ahead.
Sorry, just it's interesting the fan perception of Robbie Ray and Marcus Semien going into free agency. I mean, as much as we all kind of want both of them back, I feel like in general the fan base won't hold any ill will if they leave. And just to kind of go to the basketball side of things, I mean, what was it, 2 years ago, we rented Kawhi Leonard in maybe one of the best one-year rentals of all time, right? Came to Toronto, brought a championship. How do these two performances stack up compared to that? Obviously, that one would be number one. He brought them a championship. But these were incredible one-year rentals, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. You look at 1 year, $8 million.
On the team.
Yep. A year, $8 million for Robbie Ray, wins the American League Cy Young Award. Marcus Semien's a finalist for the MVP on a 1 year deal. It's pretty special, man. Like, the Blue Jays aren't going to beat their prior offseason. They won the offseason by a mile. Yeah. They had like a 99th percentile offseason as a front office. They're not going to beat it. They're not going to do that good again. Like, it's it's remarkable what they're able to pull off. And this is like the cold, calculated way to look at it. But the payroll efficiency they got from those two guys as well, right? Think about it: $18 million for Semien and $8 million for Ray. So that's $26 million. And how many wins above replacement between those two guys? Semien was like 6, and Ray, I don't know off the top of my head, but I would hazard a guess at 4, 5,
I think it was
maybe 5, right? Yeah. At least 10. Yeah. So 10 wins on the open market is like $7 to $8 million. And the Blue Jays got 10 wins from those two guys for 26. I mean, that is unbelievable value from a very cold and calculated front office perspective. Those guys should have been paid way more, right? Their market rate was way higher. And thankfully, they are going to get paid more now in free agency. It's very hard to get paid your true market rate as an MLB player. So it's going to be cool to see those guys finally realize that on an open market.
And like you said, between the two of them, they missed one game.
Yeah.
Right?
No, Marcus Semien played every day. Led the American League in plate appearances. Like, no, you can't say enough about how good they were. It's crazy the Blue Jays missed the playoffs. They had the AL Cy Young winner.
There was a narrative from some Blue Jays fans that they overpaid for Marcus Semien, and holy, talk about making people eat their words. I
mean. Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, whatever. Professional sports is the recency bias world, right? It's like, what have you done lately, right? Yeah. What did you do over the last year? And MLB front offices just don't operate that way. They pay you for what you're going to do, not what you've done. Eduardo Rodriguez doesn't get 5 years, $77 million, whatever it was, for what he's just done, right? It's for what he's going to do, because he's got great peripherals and spectacular stuff, but he's coming off of a pretty lousy season, right? So you get paid for Noah Syndergaard through two innings over the last 2 years. He's going to cash a $21 million check next year. Justin Verlander hasn't pitched since 2019, right? Maybe a bit in 2020, but like, I mean, you know, last time he had a full season was 2019, and he's 39.
38, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
2 years, 50, is it? Or a year in a player option? I don't know off the top of my head, but like, you get paid for
125 and then one and another option for if Verlander wants to make it 2 years, it's 250. Yeah.
Yeah. So you get paid for what teams believe you're going to do, not what you've done. So yeah, like Robbie Ray, Marcus Semien coming off of. Semien had an okay year. He was hurt, right? He had an oblique issue all year. He couldn't swing a bat, couldn't get in the batting cages. Like, he couldn't work on his swing, really. He still was fine, but he wasn't MVP tier Marcus Semien. And Robbie Ray, obviously, I mean, walked more guys than anybody in 2020 and just had a miserable year. But yeah, the Blue Jays spent that money because they believed these players were going to be better going forward, and they were right.
100%. Arden, we always appreciate your time. I do have one more question here for you before we get to listener questions, if that's all right.
Yeah.
I just wanted to touch on third base, which is obviously one of the biggest areas of need for this team. And if it's not addressed this offseason, does that concern you? Or do you think that maybe it just means that this front office feels something internal is going to work? Like, last time you were on the show, it was literally the day after Gabriel Moreno had his first start at third base in AA. And we asked you if this was just the Jays doing their regular versatility thing, or if there was maybe a little bit something substantial to that. And you even said you think that there might be something substantial to that. And now you're 100% right with that, obviously. Do you think that there's a possibility that they don't really address third base, and that we could see Moreno in a Jays jersey playing third sometime in 2022? Or is that a little crazy?
I think they'll add an infielder at least. I think they'd love to add two, but it'll depend how the offseason kind of plays out. I think they'll add at least one infielder. I think they'll try to add like a Corey Seager to play third base, or a Carlos Correa to play third base, or a Javi Baez to play second base. Like, they'll kind of start at the top of the market. If that doesn't work out, maybe they look at a Kyle Seager to platoon at third base. Maybe they look at like a Chris Taylor, who would play all over the diamond, but that could include third and second. Eduardo Escobar could play both third and second. Like, there are a lot of options out there for them to sort of add an infielder at one of those two spots. And then that would allow Kevin Biggio to kind of hop around a little bit, Santiago Espinal to hop around a little bit. Like, you're kind of mixing and matching from there. So I do think they'll add an infielder. But I also think that Gabriel Moreno will be a major leaguer in 2022. You know, if he doesn't get hurt, and if he continues to hit the way he has been, and we really have no reason to believe that he won't, I just think that that bell will come for him at some point in 2022, and he'll be ready and wearing a Blue Jays uniform at some point. And, you know, you're not going to be installing him as an everyday third baseman. I think you want him to continue with catching a whole bunch. If at the end of this developmental process you get a Russell Martin type who's like catching 4 days a week and playing third 2 days a week, that's pretty cool. That's pretty like opens up some avenues for you and some flexibility and some versatility. So that'd be sweet. I don't think the Blue Jays are looking at him as an everyday third baseman at all, but they are getting him those reps at third. And it is meaningful that, like you said, you know, he was playing a little third at AA, got hurt, came back, took a bunch of reps at third at the player development complex while he was rehabbing, and now we saw him play a little bit of third at the fall league as well. You know, they want to continue focusing on catching, certainly, but if he has that third base versatility, it just gives you more options on a nightly basis when you're Charlie Montoya filling out your lineup cards. So I just, you know, I don't think those things are mutually exclusive. I think that they'll, you know, Blue Jays will look to add an infielder, maybe even two. And I think Gabe Moreno will likely make his MLB debut in 2022 if he continues on the track that he's on.
Exciting stuff. The kid just is killing it right now. I hope Jays fans should be excited. I look forward to seeing him in a uniform on this team.
So. And we should remember the progress is not always linear, and it would be totally understandable if he, you know, maybe took a step back. Like, that would be okay. Vladimir Guerrero Jr.
Crazy.
Right? Yeah, I know. Vlad was on an absolute friggin' missile to the major leagues, and then, you know, hit a little bit of a plateau when he got there. And then,
well, he still has value, yes.
Yeah, and then figured it out, right? Nate Pearson right now is going through a little bit of a, you know, a rough patch, a little bit of a plateau himself. It doesn't always just keep going up steadily. Sometimes guys plateau, sometimes they take a step back, sometimes they get hurt, but absolutely the talent is there with Gabe Moreno for him to be a pretty special player. It's going to be fascinating to watch him try to put it together.
All right, Arden, we'll hit you with some listener questions here before we let you take off here. And I'm going to give you two here because they're very similar questions. So the first one is from Twitter, and it's from Chris. And he says, what do you think the Jays do with the outfield this winter? Lourdes is a blue chip prospect with 2 years till he gets paid huge. Teo's already expensive and has 2 years left till he's gone. And Gritch makes almost $10 million. Can't keep all of them much longer. And then Papa Pete says, is Lourdes more valuable as a left fielder or as a trade chip? So if you can kind of touch on that.
Lourdes Gurriel Jr., the 28-year-old prospect, the blue chip prospect at 28. He might just be what he is because he's 28 years old. I think this is what Lourdes Gurriel Jr. is. So the Blue Jays don't have to make a move from their outfield. I think they'll see how their offseason plays out. I do think that the Blue Jays will have to make a trade to address the starting rotation. Like, if they want to add another high upside starter, and I believe that they do, I think that doing it through trade is the most realistic way to do that, because you need to find some of that financial, you know, payroll efficiency that I was talking about earlier that you're losing with Ray and Simeon leaving. And a good way to do that would be to go out and get like a Luis Castillo, who I think his arbitration number is like $7 or $8 million, or, you know, Tyler Mahle is like $5 million. Frankie Montes from Oakland's around $5 million. Sean Manaea is around $10 million, right? Like, that's how you kind of do that. So you package some prospects and trade for a starter that way. So I do think that there's a trade coming, likely, and is an outfielder in that trade? Yeah, you could see it, right? If you're trading with Cleveland for Jose Ramirez, Cleveland probably looking for an outfielder, might still be trying to be competitive, right? Like Miami, if you're dealing for one of their young starters, an Elisir Hernandez or a Lopez or whoever, Miami might be looking for a catcher, might be looking for an outfielder. Some of those clubs are still trying to be competitive, particularly clubs that aren't high payroll clubs like Cleveland and Miami. Lourdes Gurriel Jr. is pretty attractive because that's a legit big league bat on an extremely affordable contract. So yeah, maybe Gurriel's involved in a deal there. Maybe look, Houston just signed Justin Verlander and now have like seven capable MLB starters. Maybe Jake Odorizzi's available, and maybe, you know, you kind of trade like the money owed Odorizzi for the money owed Randall Grichuk. Houston gets a center fielder that they haven't really had since George Springer left. They trade Miles Straw. So yeah, maybe they get Randall Grichuk and the Blue Jays get Jake Odorizzi. I don't know, I'm just spitballing, but like, maybe you find an opportunity to do something like that. Those would be the ways that Blue Jays could subtract from their outfield, but they don't have to. But if they did, yeah, you could do that. And then maybe you go out and sign a Michael Conforto to play left field or right field for you, right? Maybe you do get a Chris Taylor, and Chris Taylor's taking regular outfield reps for you. Like, that's the magic of the Blue Jays offseason. There's so many different ways they can do it and so many avenues they can go in. So it's going to really depend on how the offseason plays out. I think there's a scenario where the Blue Jays have the same outfield group next spring, hopefully spring. Mm-hmm. But I think there's also a scenario where they don't. We'll see.
I'm curious, Arden, on your personal opinion on this, and obviously the front office is going to decide this and evaluate the talent as they see fit, but I am curious what your thoughts are on Lourdes. Do you think he is who he is, or do you think that, because he comes across, and Adam and I have talked about this lots, is that he's either a superstar or he's streaky as all get out, and he, when he's hot, he's the hottest guy in baseball, but when he's not, he's not.
Yeah, I mean, all ball players are pretty streaky. Like George Springer, really streaky, right? Like I think Blue Jays fans got to see that this year, that there are going to be peaks and valleys with George Springer. And you know, there's very few ball players. Marcus Semien, pretty streaky, right? Like all ball players just kind of have like their hot streaks, their cold streaks, and it kind of evens out at the end. And for some guys, those heights are a lot higher and those valleys are a lot deeper. And for some guys, they're not as much. But like outside of like a Mike Trout or a Juan Soto, like the elite upper echelon players in this game, it's very rare to find that kind of consistency. So I think Lourdes Gurriel Jr. is a very good hitter. He has very good bat to ball skills, very good hand eye. He can get the barrel of his bat to a lot of different pitches around the zone, partially because he's so athletic. Like you kind of, you see him play the game and it's a wonder he's not a better fielder. You know, like it kind of tells you how much like feel matters in fielding, because Lourdes Gurriel Jr. is an athlete, man. Like he's built really well and he moves really well. You know, he just has not found a defensive home on the diamond. It's been tough for him. So I think that like that athleticism is going to allow him to always, you know, hit pretty well, but I think his swing decisions will probably limit him from really taking that next step, because we haven't seen him draw a lot of walks and make particularly good swing decisions in his career. Like he's been a pretty low walk guy, the pretty low OBP guy to this point. I'd expect that to continue, but I think he's absolutely a valuable big leaguer, a contributor to a good team.
Now, Lourdes is loved in this clubhouse. You can see it very plainly that his teammates love him. How much of a factor is the team chemistry? I mean, right now we've got great team chemistry. When it comes to trading or whatever, is that a factor at all when considering trading Lourdes? Or is it just business and everybody has to be adults about it?
He's clearly a fun guy to be around, right? Like you can kind of tell that, you know, everybody has a smile on their face. He's constantly just, you know, having the shots of the dugout this year were really cool to watch, weren't they? Like just of how, you know, a lot of those guys interacted, and just like, Ross Atkins calls it joy. And I kind of agree with them, like the joy that they had playing every day. So yeah, you don't want to do anything that's going to, you know, really hurt your chemistry in the clubhouse. But I think that the Blue Jays would feel confident that like a lot of that chemistry and a lot of those vibes, like that's going to be there with Vladimir Guerrero Jr., Bo Bichette, George Springer, Jose Berríos, with Alek Manoah, with a lot of the, you know, personalities and individuals you've installed in there. So, I mean, yeah, I think there would be guys that would be bummed if Lourdes Gurriel Jr. wasn't their teammate anymore. But I mean, for, you know, the Blue Jays, it's something they consider, but I think that, you know, the higher leverage thing would be getting a starting pitcher who's really going to, you know, if you have to include Gurriel in a trade that's going to give you a frontline starter that's going to get you over the hump. Blue Jays need to project to win more than 91 games next year. 91's not enough in this division. We just learned that this year. You got to project to win 93, 94. Yeah. So if that's what it takes to get you to that projection, everybody's going to be having a pretty good time if they're going to the postseason and they're in the playoffs.
That's right? A great way.
Everybody's going
to
be enjoying that.
It's a good way to build chemistry, right?
Yeah. Teams that win a lot always have good chemistry, don't they?
So happy, too.
Funny how that works. Clubhouse dissent always happens with teams that are losing. It's weird. Yeah.
No, teams that are winning never seem to have those clubhouse meetings, right? Like, it's never the doors are closed, they're having a meeting. Like, doesn't seem to happen for the winning teams never have meetings. I don't know why.
So your next question is from Derek in our Discord, and he says, curious to know who your favorite player is, past and present.
I always liked Matt Stairs for a long time growing up, because he was Canadian and because he just hit bombs.
Right? Intense.
And he became this really cool kind of mercenary hired gun pinch hitter towards the end of his career. I just thought that was like a really cool career arc when he was still like 41 and literally just on NL rosters as a pinch hitter. I thought that was pretty sweet. And so, and you know, and a guy who clearly like in the offseason seasons would go and coach hockey in the East Coast of Canada and probably crush a bunch of beers and have a great time. I mean, I don't know. He was just, he was a fun guy to follow. So he was a personal favorite.
And present favorite.
Present favorite. There's a lot of fun players to watch these days, man. Javi Baez is a lot of fun to watch. He's a ton of fun. Acuna, Tatis are a lot of fun to watch. Soto is so much fun to watch. Probably forgetting a bunch of guys. It's the guys who really bring their personality to the game, right? And really bring a little bit of flair. Like Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is a lot of fun to watch, man. Like it's cool seeing some of these kids in the game, like just kind of be themselves, wear their hearts on their sleeves. Like they're about watching this postseason. There were bat flips every night that were way more momentous than Jose Bautista's bat flip. Every night, on a nightly basis, guys were like sending their bats to the moon. And Jose Bautista had to like be thrown at and punched for years and years after that happened, for that grievous, heinous affront to the game of baseball. And it's so great we've gone to a place now where like every night there are, you know, it's not KBO quite yet, but it's somewhere in between. And every night there are cool bat flips that are, way more violent than Jose Bautista's were. So those Tatis, Acuna, Baez, like those Lindor is a lot of fun to watch, those kind of guys.
All right, your last question is from Wannabe Outpost from our Discord, and he says, are we locked into signing Ray at his asking price at this point in free agency? I'm guessing there's going to be no discount for the Jays.
I mean, the Blue Jays aren't locked into anything. They don't have to do anything, right? Like they're gonna, if we know one thing about this front office, is that they're very disciplined. They have a strategy. They have a very clear walk away, and they don't really go beyond what their valuation is on players. So, I mean, they got a number for Robbie Ray, and Robbie Ray's representation has a number for Robbie Ray. And if those two numbers meet, sure, they can get something done, but the Blue Jays aren't really going to go beyond their number. Like, we haven't seen them do that with anyone to this point, and I don't anticipate that they would, because they're just very disciplined in the way that they do things.
100% agree. Artem, thank you so much for taking the time, man. We always enjoy talking baseball with you, and always enjoy watching what you're doing on Sportsnet and just at the letters. And absolutely, man, really appreciate your time.
Happy to be here. We'll do it again. Thanks, guys.
Looking forward to it.
Thanks for listening to the Walk Off Podcast with Scott Belford and Adam Mack, with a new episode every Friday.
Oh! Osmer with a drive. Cheese and cracker shows to pitch to him. Wrong move.
Thanks for listening.